It is 5:31, and I call the Board of Education meeting for January 10th, 2017 to order. Dr. Mitchell, would you call roll?
Certainly. Angelina Pride?
Present.
David Malkin?
Present.
Donna Friedman?
Here.
Carrie Ten?
Here.
Lynn Ebenkamp?
Here.
All board members are present.
I guess I should turn my mic on, huh? Okay, I need a motion to adopt the regular agenda of our tonight's board meeting.
I'll move to adopt the agenda for tonight's
second.
Board meeting.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Any items to be pulled? Oh, all right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We have an agenda. Are there any comments regarding the closed session part of the agenda?
None have been received.
All right. Hearing none, we will adjourn to the closed session at 5:32. Okay, it's 7:08, and we're returning to close to open session. Tonight, we're fortunate to have one of our schools with us again, and we have Killian Elementary doing several things tonight. First of all, we'll have our flag salute led by Killian Elementary student Rachel Hong. Please stand.
Put your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Rachel. Next, I'd like to report out from closed session tonight. The Board of Education approved the appointment of Laurel Estrada to the position of coordinator of the Family Resource Center with an effective date to be determined. On a motion, Donna Friedman, and a second by Carrie Chen. The vote of the board was Angelina Pride, yes. Lynn Ebenkamp, yes. Carrie Chen, yes. Donna Friedman, yes. And David Malcolm, yes. Okay, now we go back to Killian again. So I want to thank Killian for the and their students, their parents and staff and community members for providing refreshments for our meeting tonight. Thank you. Each board meeting we try to spotlight a school, and as I said, it's Killian. Tonight I'd like to introduce Jessica Chandler and sixth grade student Rachel Hong, and they're going to provide a brief report highlighting what's going on at Killian Elementary. Also with them is their principal, Karen McGonna.
You can pull it down.
Pull it down.
No, you can pull the whole thing. There you go.
Okay, well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to be here to share a little bit about our student council program and its positive impact on school climate. I work with amazing staff at Killian. I'd like to acknowledge our assistant principal here this evening, Jun Sakaue. And also our teacher in charge of student council, Ms. Alex Johnson. So we do have two wonderful speakers this evening. Jessica Chandler is an instructional assistant in our SH preschool class. She's a new supervisor, a parent, and also the coordinator for student council. So, Mrs. Chandler.
Good evening. My name is Jessica Chandler. Not only am I a classified employee here at Roland Unified School District, I am also a volunteer. 3 years ago, I decided to take on the role as a student council advisor. I wanted to give students an opportunity to learn and how to become future leaders in today's society. So I established the program to be held after school to students who will meet the following requirements. 1, 5th and 6th grade students only. 2, grades must consist of a C or better. 3, attendance must be in good standing. 4, teacher and parent signature required before participation. The responsibilities include: attend monthly meetings every first Thursday of the month from 2:40 to 3:15, which are held in our school library. 2, be an example of the 6 pillars of the character count. 3, participate in assemblies. 4, school spirit leaders. 5, make posters. 6, provide input on school issues. 7, be role models for all students. Lastly, have a great attitude. This year, we have done something differently. We have our student officers for both 5th and 6th grade. Our student officers include president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. Student Council has grown over the last 3 years. I started off with 40 students the first year. The second year, 55 students. It's with great honor that I announce that I have 70 participants in Student Council. These students wear purple shirts, which symbolizes the character of citizenship. When you come to visit Killian, be sure to look out for our students with the purple shirts. Thank you. And today I have with us our vice president, our 6th grade vice president, Rachel Hung.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rachel Hung. I am the vice president of Student Council, and I'm here to talk to you about why Student Council is fun. Well, there are many reasons why Student Council is fun. One reason why Student Council is fun is because we get to create different kinds of events for students. These events are really fun for holidays and just in general. Some events that we have thought of is Pajama Day, Crazy Hair Day, Superhero Day, and more. Additional to creating events, by creating events, we get to spread school spirit. It's very important that Student Council spread school spirit because we are the leaders of the school and people look up to us. Another thing that is fun about Student Council is that we get to meet and work with new people. In Student Council, you need to be a 5th grader or a 6th grader to join. So you can meet new 6th graders or 5th graders and get to hang out and work with them together. Finally, Student Council is fun because we get to have pizza parties when we do a good job. Adding to that, Ms. Magana and Ms. Chandler are very fun to work with, and I'm very lucky to work with awesome people like you guys. So with that being said, thank you and Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to our superintendent's report. Dr. Mitchell.
So thank you very much from Killian to represent and the student council and the purple shirt. So thank you for sharing. Happy New Year to everyone. 2017 has been off to a very busy start, and we demonstrated our commitment to innovative learning for all by offering our winter professional development opportunities last week for all of our staff. More than 350 certificated and 250 classified employees took part in engaging conference sessions focused on improving the areas in technology, specific areas regarding instruction, or pieces that relate to their particular position within the district. Classified sessions were offered for special education, teamwork, nutrition services, custodial services, and many more. I would like to thank a huge team that organized the massive professional development training for our staff and also presented sessions. Dennis took the lead on planning this, but for the classified, Teresa for certificated, Alex and Zapur were also involved. But our technology department really hit it out of the park because they were supporting both of them, and many of our technology staff were providing sessions as well. So it was really a team effort, and it was Roland teaching Roland, and it was a fabulous couple of days of professional development. I would also like to introduce to the community Brandy Chapman. So Brandy has been selected as our new administrative assistant. So welcome. Enjoy your first board meeting, Brandy. Perfect. I'd also like to thank our community for generous donations, and they're on the board agenda this evening. But we have a few community members who have provided some donations to the district that I'd like to acknowledge. So our Board of Supervisors has provided $500 that went to our holiday gift baskets. In total, the holiday gift basket program we solicited donations from our employees as well as others. Our employees provided almost $1,900 to the holiday gift baskets. And the Rotary Club of Walnut Valley partners with the district, and we provided more than 200 families their holiday meal over the holidays. And the Interact students, so students that are part of the Rotary from both the Roland School District, Hacienda La Puente, and Walnut Valley came together on a Saturday with staff and Rotarians to put together those baskets. So it was a really outstanding event. We also have a $1,000 donation from Homer Escamilla. It was through a corporate matching program. And then $2,500 from the Walnut Valley Rotary through both a grant and a direct donation that will go to the Family Resource Center for direct purposes of providing some learning materials in the means of calculators, as well as shoes and school uniforms for our students in need. So I'd like to recognize those groups. Last but certainly not least, although we've just hit the mark to welcome in 2017, we are already planning and preparing for the 2017-18 school year. So enrollment for next school year is just around the corner and will kick off officially on February the 6th. I also want to make sure that the community knows that on Saturday, February 4th, is our showcase. It will be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Roland Heights Community Center. And at that location will be all of our schools will be there showing the highlights of the programs that they offer in all of our schools, as well as most of the departments in the district. We will also have entertainment. There will be a courtesy shuttle for our community offered from Roland High School, as well as stopping at Hurley, Giano, and Nogales High School. We also have tour day, so all of our schools are open for tours for the community to see learning and taking place on February 7th at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. And advertising for all of these events will take place in the San Gabriel Valley Tribune, along with a postcard mailer that will be going out to about 37,000 local households. And so please help us spread the word. Thank you very much, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell. This is the time when we have our high school students report to us and give us little snippets of information from their campuses. Tonight we're missing Santana. I remember last month Giselle said it was her last month to attend, so they may be getting the fill-in person set. But we do have, from Nogales High School, we have Laura Martinez. So, Laura.
Good evening, Madam President, Superintendent Dr. Mitchell, members of the Cabinet, and members of the audience. My name is Laura Martinez, and I'm here tonight to represent Nogales High School. We're back from winter break, and our Nobles are ready to continue showing their pride. Since break, our school's band has had their winter concert. Wrestling and basketball have competed in tournaments throughout the holiday season, while the boys' soccer team has been able to make it to semifinals in the North Orange County Classic Tournament. Our boys' soccer team was ranked number 8, which means that both boys and girls soccer teams are overall ranked top 10 in the San Gabriel Tribune. The varsity basketball team beat New West 70-50. The school is proud of all the work and are looking forward to more wins. We hope to see some of you here today come out and support our Nobles. Thank you.
And next we have John Roland High School, Lee Kawachi.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the board, Superintendent Dr. Mitchell, members of the audience. My name is Leigh Kwachi, and I'm the student representative for Roland High School. Last month, we ended our semester with canned food drives, clothing drives, and supplies for the veterans. To add on to that, Art Club and Hooked Club made ornaments to donate to St. Jude's Hospital, and the patients were very grateful, and Roland High School was able to connect with the patients. During winter break, Leo Lions Club was able to volunteer at the Rose Parade. For the Rose Parade, they were cutting flowers for like from 9 to 3, so they're just chopping flowers all day. And that brings us to this week. Interact Club will be hosting a charity dinner for the first time, and it will be at Mount Sac Student Center. This will be the charity dinner for Water for Molly. It's a $15 donation, and all the proceeds go for the charity. And it helps with water services and bringing our community service to an international level. Our class of 2019 officers are planning a dodgeball tournament, which will take place during February. It's all week long. Teachers and students will be able to group up in teams and then compete. Our Renaissance Revealing Rally will be this Friday. We will reveal the theme as well as inform the students about the requirements, which include no D's or F's, 2.5 GPA or higher from first semester, and they will also be recognized for various academic achievement. There will also be entertainment from cheer and class dances during the Renaissance Assembly, which is on Friday, February 24th. This month, our senior event is Jam in January. This is where seniors can enjoy complimentary food, and this month it will be McChicken with sweet tea, and they can jam out to music. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Always nice to hear what the students are doing on their campuses, isn't it? Thank you for coming. Okay, section 4D is our staff report section, facilities first. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Mitchell.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So, Alex Flores, would you like to introduce Russ for our presentation?
Yes, Russ Hall from Ledesma Meyer will be making a presentation today on the status of the Roland project.
Good evening, everybody. Dr. Mitchell, Madam President, board members. Can you hear me okay? As Alex had mentioned, my name is Russ Hall. I'm superintendent for the Roland High School construction project, and I have been asked to give a brief update tonight for you. There are just a few slides. Alex, did you have a remote, or did you just want to go through them as I get to them, or...
We're both here for you.
Okay, so for a project overview, the project was awarded back in June of this year. Construction began a week later, June 21st, and we have a completion date of September of 2019. It's a singular bid project which has been awarded to one contractor. The contractor's name is ACC. For a general overview of the project description, it's a three-phase project which will take place over 3 years. The work scope includes the demo of the existing administration building, the library building, and the H building. It also includes the demo of all the portable buildings on the campus with new construction of the following buildings. There's a new two-story 22-classroom building, which is phase one. That's currently what's in progress right now. Upcoming would be a two-story admin building, which is accompanied with a library, a performing arts center with a kitchen facility, also has a NPR classroom or room involved in that. We have a special education building, which will be in phase two, an ASB building in phase two, And then the final phase will include a student parking lot, new student parking lot. For a phase one overview, some of the items that we completed already for site preparation is the installation of a new site access road that comes off of Valencia Boulevard, installation of a new contractor employee parking lot, and the installation of a new classroom material laydown yard, and the relocation of a portal building P27, which is going to be used as a future low voltage hub. So all those items are currently complete. The project's current status is that the site preparation tasks, which I just spoke about, are complete. Phase one site underground utilities are installed. The building foundations for the new classroom and the concrete slab are complete. The steel erection is in progress and near completion. The framing of the interior and exterior walls are in progress. And the roofing system and exterior skin for the new classroom building will be installed soon. And then we've included some slides for visual aid. This is the building slab that was prepared. It was over excavate and set to the proper grades so we could get started. Next slide shows a picture of the foundations for the new classroom building being excavated, or actually they're excavated in this slide. This slide shows the new classroom building foundations being formed and then poured with concrete. This slide depicts the new building slab once it was poured. This slide depicts the new classroom steel erection. It's started in progress there. And this slide shows the current situation or status of the building construction. And the final slide is an architectural rendering of what the building would look like from approximately the same view. So a pretty brief update, but that's where we're at.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Board?
What's the estimate completion date of the phase one, two, and three?
It'll be done this summer.
Phase one?
This summer.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have 6 months from now, yeah.
6 months, okay. So when you... The phase one complete, the all 22 classrooms can be open and used?
Yes. Okay.
Being here in southern sunny California, have you had construction delays because of our recent weather?
Well, yeah, we've had 10 rain days so far. It's created some challenge, but it hasn't set us back in general.
Is that built in your estimate or is something that you didn't expect?
The front end builds in rain days in their construction calendar front end. And I think we're 1 day past that. But even with the rain, the crews have been doing a good job. We've been working through the rain. There's some items you can't continue in the rain. For example, steel construction, welding, those type items. But once we get the roof installed, that's going to help us out quite a bit. We'll get what we call the building dried in, and we'll be able to continue some interior work. But yeah, nobody likes the rain construction. We need it, but I don't need it.
Roland doesn't need it. Are there any more questions? Thank you. I can really see the progress that you're...
Thank you.
I'm kind of back that way along Valencia quite often, and I can see the steel going up, and I can see the real progress you're making.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with it right now, so it's...
Thank you.
If I can add real quickly, I want to thank Russ for all his communication he has with the site and with Mitch. He's there on site every day and always constantly communicating with the school site to make sure it's an easy transition there. One of the things the architect commented on when I spoke to him about a few weeks ago, that this is one of the quietest projects because it's ironwork. There's a lot of bending and a lot of banging going on, but in that phase that the constructability review that we did beforehand has really paid off significantly so far with this project, and we're hoping to continue that way. Thank you, Russ.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Russ. Next, we'll have an overview of the LCAP by Teresa Healy.
Perfect. Thank you. So we are getting ready to head into LCAP season, and we're always constantly evaluating our programs and looking at ways to improve. But there's a formal structure that we do put in place in the spring. And so Teresa's going to share with the board and with the community a little bit about that structure and what the board can expect moving forward.
Well, good evening. It's funny not to have my presentation in front of me and behind me, but we're going to go with it anyway because I have my papers. So this is our overview this evening. As we go through the months leading up to the final copy or final draft of our LCAP, we'll be making different reports. So again, this is just the overview of the process to talk about what we're going to do to revise our plan for the school year. So what is the LCAP and why? We've done this for a few years now. This should be very familiar to us. It's the plan that reflects our district's programmatic and budgetary priorities. So when we went to the LCFF funding model, it combined the budget together with our plans for our education systems and supporting our students. It provides a framework around our 8 state priorities. We're required to meet each of those 8 state priorities. And it provides a plan and a process that ensures stakeholder input, which was very important to the LCFF process, provides accountability, and addresses the needs of all of our students. Our favorite little wheel, our 8 state priorities. As we go around, if you start at the bottom, our basic services, course access, school climate, student achievement, student engagement, parental involvement, implementation of the Common Core standards, other student outcomes, those are all addressed in our current LCAP, and as we continue down the process, we obviously will continue to address them. As we get into the evaluation of the process, or of the LCAP, you're starting to see information about the rubrics that are coming out from the CDE and the State Board of Education. That will tie directly to these 8 state priorities. So when they have their system in place fully, it will address all of those. So there are 3 phases to or steps to our revision. The first is to get the input from our stakeholders. We want to know how we're doing with our kiddos, how, you know, if we're meeting their needs, if we're getting them where they need to be. So we're gathering input on our priorities. So we will have multiple meetings and surveys and gatherings together to get information. We will gather information on our priorities, so what's important to our community and our stakeholders, but also where we are going and how we're doing in meeting those needs. Then we will work on our annual report. We have our annual metrics that we've identified in our current plan. Many of them are local metrics because the state had not given us their metrics yet. So we will analyze those, but as the rubrics come on board, we will begin to identify those areas of where we need improvement or where we're being successful and start to analyze to those rubrics. And then we use the data to determine our degree of success with our students. Then we will work on a revision and our update. So there's a 2-fold process. We're writing our annual report. So what did we do this school year? But then also, what are we going to do for the next 3 years? So it's a kind of a hand-in-hand process. So we use the information from our annual report, our input from our stakeholders, decide what our revisions need to be. And then, of course, we must align to our budget. So that has to go hand-in-hand together. So we will work with Alex and his team as well to work on the budget together. There are some changes in the LCAP that you will see when we write the new version for the 17-20 school plan. I've tried saying 17-20 now. I didn't get used to say 20. The template, the California Department of Education, of course, approves all of our plans through the county offices. So LA County Office of Education approved our plan on behalf of the state, and they gather feedback from both the county and from community and stakeholders as well. And they made recommendations to the State Board of Education to some template revisions. They're trying to make it a very transparent process for families, for staff, for communities to see what's going on in their schools, but also to be very in-depth about the pieces that are there. So, again, having to match to the budget, having to match to all the 8 state priorities, it makes it for a complex plan regardless of how you template it. Our current plan is 130 pages, so they're looking at some streamlining opportunities, but also providing clarity. And so sometimes we streamline, but we might add pages. So some of the revisions that are occurring, there will be an addition of a plan summary. They would like us to give a 1-2-page summary that's an overview of our plan. What is Roland Unified about? What's important to us? What are we addressing in our plan? How are we meeting the needs of our targeted subgroup students? And so that will be an addition to the plan. And that's sort of the down and dirty of the plan. So if I didn't want to read all 130 pages, I could reference that summary. The next piece is a 3-year inclusive plan. It's been a 3-year rolling plan. And so we've always had, 3 years on the plan. They're looking at making it inclusive. We're not exactly sure how that will work because the budget is always 3 years out and we have to align, so we're waiting for news on how that's going to look. There are also specific ties to the evaluation rubric. So as the evaluation rubrics come on board, and I'm going to share with you some of those pieces in a minute, as those pieces come on board, they are very much tying those actions to the evaluation rubric, and we have to identify in our plan where our actions are to support improving on those rubrics. The new design format, it will provide an ease of reading. They've sort of rethought the page layout so that it's easier. They got a lot of comments about the difficulty to sort of follow along on an action from year to year or to take the annual report at the beginning and it's sort of, that's done, I want to see what you're going to do. And so they're shifting some of those pieces around. And another piece that is very important to that was the State Board spent a lot of time on is the idea of the supplemental concentration money is for the targeted students. And they felt that in all of the plans, it wasn't always evident to say this is the targeted group that we're doing. So we need to identify in our planned actions and services how we are improving it. So if we do that service for that group of students, how do we expect that that will create improvement? So that's a new addition for us. Our annual report will stay very similar in the scope of the work. So we need to share about what's accomplished. We need to go action by action, task by task, and determine, you know, did we do the action? To what degree did we do the action? Then we need to look at the impact of the action. So did we accomplish it? Did we partially accomplish it? And then what student results do we get from completing or partially completing that action? And then we need to, where it's applicable, we will need to match it up to the state rubrics. We need to look at actions that need to be continued or expand or deleted. Maybe we're done with something. Maybe something's not working. We need to take that out of our plan. Maybe we need to find a better answer or a different answer. And so we will add or revise. And then we just need to modify our plan for future actions because, again, we still have to add our third year on. The state indicators, as we look back at the 8 state priorities, there will be indicators that match, but they won't be a one-to-one alignment. There won't be a basic services indicator, but there will be indicators to each of them. So some of them will have multiples, and some of them will be up to local measures. So in, for example, if the 8th state priority is other local priorities or local outcomes. So, for example, we have identified music and arts as a priority in extracurricular activities. That's a line item in our LCAP that's been well received by our community. And so we would have a local measure to that. The state will not give us one. But the state indicators or the rubrics, there will be academic indicators. They will use the new SBAC testing for that. That's an obvious answer. But they will also look at other measures for our high school students. Progress towards English proficiency, so how are our students doing on the CELT, and then what will be the new assessment for that. Our high school graduation rate, how does that compare? And it's not just a static piece, but it's also a growth piece. College and career readiness, as our students leave us in 12th grade, are they ready for college or career? And then measures of student engagement, that will include suspension rates by grade spans and chronic absences. That metric is not available yet, so we're not exactly sure what they will do with chronic absence. So this very complex chart shows us where we are with our indicators. We are in the first column, the 2016-17 column, and the blue identifies each of those areas where there will be a rubric or a measure. So our first one, the academic indicator, we'll be using the CAF scores at both English Language Arts and Math in 3rd through 8th grades, and so that is fully operational at this point. We know what the scores are. We have baseline scores, and so we will be measured against that this school year, and so we will continue that through the expected 19-20. College and career indicators, they're working on that right now, so they're in process of trying to decide what that change model will look like, what the metric will be, and so in 17-18, we will pilot that measure. English learner indicator, currently we have the CELT testing, and that is being phased out for the LPAC test, and so this year we will still use our CELT results, but we will also field test the LPAC, and then from that point on, from 17-18 on, it will be the LPAC scores. Our graduation rate indicator, that is also completed. It's a 4-year cohort model, so it accounts for our 9th graders becoming 10th graders, becoming 11th graders, becoming 12th graders, and graduating on time. And so it's a model that's over time. It's a difficult measure to move quickly because our current metric is from 2 graduations ago, and it's also from when they were freshmen. So if you want to say, hey, let's improve that graduation rate, you have to think about it 6 years out in essence. But we are working on that four-year cohort rate. It is a pretty accurate picture of our schools, but it is sort of in arrears. Our suspension rate indicator, it's a two-year suspension change over time model. So as we compare suspension rate to year to year, that will be the model. Below the line are some things that are really just sort of out there. We're not sure exactly where they're going to go. The first one is the academic indicator for science. Right now we still have the California Science Test, and we are switching over to the new test, and then also the California Alternative Assessment. So trying to figure out where they're going to go with those pieces and where the test will go, and then how they will measure and compare and include that into the academic indicators. The Alternative Accountability System, or ASAM, our continuation high schools were measured when we were using APIs and 800s and things. We were not using that for our continuation schools. They had a model called the ASAM, and they were to pick indicators that, because of the at-risk population, that they tried to improve things like graduation rates, course completions, attendance, discipline pieces. And so they're bringing that back, but they're looking at it very closely to see what the measures will be and to what degree that that will feed into the model. The high school readiness indicator, I'm sorry, I skipped one, the chronic absentee indicator, they're looking at the data this year. They've pulled a model that they think is pretty accurate, pretty fair for schools, and especially with high-risk populations. But they're looking to see what the pilot data shows this school year, and then they will make decisions later. And then the high school readiness indicator, we're not sure exactly how that will go. Again, that's sort of a middle school piece. And then our local indicators that we can share. And there's a piece about a school climate survey that will also work at school climate. And in the current expectation is that as a district we do one, and we use the Healthy Kids Survey currently, but they're talking about maybe providing one statewide. So we're not sure where that will go. So there's a lot of information there, a lot of information to gather, so that's probably our biggest new area of work for us as LCAP writers or LCAP pullers together, so that we're making sure that we're demonstrating the success of our students, because our students are very successful, but that we're also paying attention to all of those areas and in the way that they would like us to pay attention to them. So as a reminder, Dr. Huff did a study session with us about the rubrics, and so this is the generic rubric. This is not a rubric that counts anywhere. Just a couple reminders, but it's about the idea there's a status, and it goes from very low to very high. And then each of the rubrics has a piece about change over time or change in status. And so red is not a great color. Green or blue is beautiful. So that's where you kind of want to go up into that right top corner of the rubrics. And for each measurement, so whether you're looking at academic or attendance or suspensions, there's going to be a status rate that's on the left-hand side that they determine, and it's going to be based on data from all of the districts in the state. And then there will be a change model, so how do we increase or decrease over time? And, you know, graduation rate doesn't move very quickly, so, you know, you see things like 1% on there, versus on academic achievement, you'll see things like 5 or 10%. So the change over time is sort of dependent on the measure that you're doing. So you read it where you see where you are now. So in the example, it would be high, and you scoot yourself across. And then if you look at the data to see that you've increased, then we would show up as a green school. And what will happen is you won't get one measure. As a reminder, you'll get many measures. So we'll get an academic indicator and an attendance indicator and a school climate indicator based on colors. And so each school and the district will have a series of colors. So as we look at our LCAP, as a reminder, we do have six goals in our LCAP. We're going to spend a lot of time on these in the next few months, diving deep into them. So we have our academic achievement for all students, our college and career readiness with 21st century skills, communication and collaboration, fiscal responsibility and facilities, student staff safety and wellness, and leadership. As I went through the indicators that the state's expecting, you can see the places where a lot of our indicators will fall, and you can see that we do cover all eight of them. Our first goal, goal one, is about academic achievement for all. We want to provide a comprehensive, well-rounded, rigorous educational experience for all of our students. We want to make sure that they're supported by engaging student strategies and sustained by high-quality professional development for our staff. We want to make sure that all of our students, regardless of who they are, they will meet or exceed their growth targets. And so you see in the bullet point some of the things that we spend our money on. This is our most expensive goal. We have materials, very expensive, our adoptions, our supplemental materials, professional development. We spend a lot of time and effort on my staff side, but also our teacher staff and classified staff on professional development to ensure that they continue to hone their craft. Assessments, monitoring kids as we go through the school year. Interventions, providing interventions during the school day, after school, within the classroom, additional support folks. Extended learning, summer schools, after schools, those kinds of things. And then student support, and our biggest ticket item in that place is counselors. Our second goal is about college and career readiness and 21st century skills. We have a desire to increase our percent of graduates who complete their A to G requirements and therefore are college eligible, enroll in APIB honors courses, increase our STEM, and continue to work on our career technical education. So our career pathways are a big piece of that. We also have our CTIG grant that's kind of running parallel to our LCAP work, and so that's been a nice partnership. Our 21st century learning, our technology implementations, our PD, our coaching, our college and career ready, providing opportunities for kids to do the senior seminar classes, our AVID AP programs and supporting those, technology with some infrastructure, and again, our student support pieces with counseling. Our third goal is about communication and collaboration. We want to make sure that we have a culture of collaboration and open and transparent communication. Make sure that we're sharing information, we're sharing it timely, and we want to make sure that all of our stakeholders are educated. And so we have a commitment for parent education. We have many opportunities for parents from district-wide pieces like our Parent Involvement Academy to site-based pieces like a Family Literacy Night or PK. Communication opportunities. Gina does a great job getting the word out and supporting her with some of those tools. And then targeting our subgroups, ensuring that our at-risk populations and our targeted subgroups, that their parents are especially educated and provided with support. Our fourth goal is split into two. We want to maintain our fiscal responsibility. We like to have district solvency, and so, you know, Mr. Flores makes sure that we do that as part of our LCAP, and he also makes sure that our facilities are enhanced for students to optimize their learning. And so a commitment to providing maintenance, continuing to make sure our schools look good, function well, work well, and then technology infrastructure and technology devices. Phil gave us an update on that earlier this school year, so continuing that work. Goal number five, students, staff safety and wellness, making sure that our plans, our programs, and our operational procedures promote the health and academic and personal support and safety for our students. So our first piece is about support for attendance, behavior, and character development. You've heard a lot about our PBIS, our Positive Behavior Intervention System, and the work that we're doing. We've cohort one, the first group of schools, our eight schools are into their second year of planning. They're implementing their level one, and they are planning level two. Our cohort one is planning level one and for implementation for next year, and then we will complete our cohorts next school year. We're also working on our community day school redesign, so how do we support those kids that are at super high risk on behavior and academic needs, providing counseling for our students, providing safety training. Rosanna just did some training over the break with some of our classified staff on safety, and then supporting our family resource center. That's a big ticket item in the school because it provides lots of services for our families and students. The next goal is leadership. We want to make sure that we have strong leadership at all levels of the organization, that we make sure their educational experience is world-class, and we want to make sure that we're continuing to improve. So we need to improve as adults and in leadership and grow our leadership so that we can continue to support our students at a high level. So the first is about our professional development and very much focused on leadership, and so we've offered leadership academies both for certificated and classified staff, and they're in process right now. Our district leadership team has had opportunities for professional development and just opportunities for mentoring and coaching. Recruiting, hiring, retaining, and promoting high-quality staff. So as we look to hire people or promote people, that we're looking at our staff and making sure that we're training people to go to the next level. That we're providing collaboration for our staff. So our late start or early out Mondays, articulation opportunities. Our elementary teachers have 2 hours of preparation time each week. And then celebrating the good that we do. You saw tonight as our Killian staff and students got to share about what they're doing. We've had many opportunities to take pictures up here in front of the board dais for recognizing our outstanding events and students and staff. And examples of that in a bigger way are Gold Ribbon Schools and our Employees of the Year. So what's going to happen as we continue moving on? Okay, I have to apologize if I screwed up the dates because it's really hard to be in this year and think about this year and last year and next year and 3 years out. So I think I got them all right, but I apologize if they're wrong. So we are reviewing the 16-17 LCAP, and we are going to revise the 17-18 LCAP that actually goes through 2020. So that's the process. So if I screw up the dates, that is the correct thing. I think Mr. Humphreys has it on tape if you get confused. So first we have our LCAP Council, and that's a group of stakeholders that are representative of our community, our employee groups, our students are invited, parents, and it's very representative of who we are. And so they review the LCAP, they give us suggestions, they represent groups of people, and so we ask them to talk to their constituents and bring back that information. And so we have three meetings with them, an initial meeting to gather their initial input, and then opportunity to organize them to go out and get information with us. Then we bring back that information and get some suggestions from them about how for revisions, and then we bring back the revisions to them at that last meeting. Our 16-17 annual report to the board of the community. Oh, I pulled the wrong page, sorry. Review of our goals and outcomes at the board presentation. So I'm going to go off my slides and off my notes. We're here tonight with the overview, and then on February 14th, we're going to review goals 3 through 6, and then March 14th, goals 1 and 2. And I know that seems a little backwards, but that has to do with us getting some data, and we can give a more accurate picture of our mid-year if we push 1 and 2 out a little bit. Community and parent input, we are required to meet with our English learner parent group, and we are required to meet with our Title I parent group, and so we use our DLAC, or District English Language Advisory Committee, as representatives of our English language parents, and we use our Superintendent's Parent Council as representatives for our Title I parents, and we are required to meet with them and gather information, gather feedback, and then get their input again on the draft of the LCAP. So that will happen in February and then March, and we'll touch base with them again later after the LCAP is written. And then we'll have we have two community meetings. The locations are determined at this moment. I believe the first one will be at Roland High School. The second one, I'm not sure. And that will be an opportunity for just anyone in the community who wishes to come and share information with us. They can come and share that. Student input. We like eating pizza. We actually like talking to students more, but we do like eating pizza, so we eat a lot of pizza. So we are going to meet with our three high school groups, our two middle school groups, some of our K-8 friends. One of the things we realized last year when we included the K-8s, we got some elementary voice in the mix, but we realized that we missed some of our demographics of students, and so we are going to go to a couple of our schools on the north side, and that sort of gives us an accurate picture of all of our students in the district. So we will be eating lots of pizza. And it's great because that's who we serve. That's our product, our kids. And so to have them tell us, I got what I needed, I didn't get, I needed a little more of this, I wish we didn't have to do that. Homework comes up sometimes. But, you know, just trying to get what it is that, you know, what they're feeling. Because they're the ones who, you know, I train the teachers and then what happens in their classroom. Or, you know, we give them the materials and they're the ones who use them. And so it's very valuable input. Our employee and association input. We are required to meet with our association groups, so we have a meeting with CSEA, ARE, and ARA, which happens in our district leadership team, and we will meet with them and have their leadership teams meet with us and give us their share with us their input as well. And then again, we will have an online survey for community staff, parents, kids to go on, and that will be open for about a month. Then we have our LCAP Council, which I already talked about, and then we report to the community, and then we will present our draft on June 14th. Oops, that's the wrong date. That's the old date. June 6th, thank you, and then June 13th for our approval. Any questions?
Are there any questions, Board?
Just a few comments. For the community survey, it'd be nice if we can update that from last year.
Yes.
I think we can be able to make a little bit more user-friendly. On the tracking of suspensions, if we would open up a alternative learning center, alternative to suspension, are those factored into that outcome or not?
In the model that we are looking at is the alternative suspension center. If a student chose to go there, then we would suspend the suspension, so they would not count.
Okay, so it would not count. Okay.
So that would be a way for us to reduce our suspension numbers.
Okay. The supplemental and concentration funds, where you said they're going to be tracked as to what students received them?
So what we're required to do now in the current template, you have there's a place near the very end. It's called Section B. And I say, here overall, here's the things we do for our targeted kids. We do this and we do that. And it's more of a narrative. In each big action, So like I say I'm going to do professional development, then I list some things. I have to then say that's how that supports those students. So I have to identify the group that it belongs to, and I give a very short why that does. What will happen is that piece that used to be at the bottom goes into the actual plan, and I expand what I say about each action.
Now, if we have over 70%, mm-hmm. then we can use those funds for all students, right?
We can certainly distribute them very widely, yes.
Okay.
The requirement will be how did those 74% of students improve?
Right. Appreciate the summary. Given person needs an award, whoever came up with that idea.
I don't know. My 130 papers are fascinating, and they're really great reading. Just saying. Just have to read it in chunks.
Thank you, Teresa.
You're very welcome.
I just have one easy one.
Oh, good.
Is the LPAC a completely new test this year?
Yes, it is. And it's a pilot this year. The idea is that it more accurately shares the information that a kid actually knows. We're finding that some students that become what we call long-term English learners or LTELs, the test doesn't accurately portray what they know. And then on the newcomer side, you have the same problem. They may know more than they can sort of share because of the format of the testing. And so it will be more accurate. It's designed to be more accurate.
Will it be difficult for them to convert over? Does the test look that much different?
It's electronic, and so it will look very different from that perspective, and then the actual items I don't actually know.
Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Healy. Okay, I'll turn the next section over to Dr. Mitchell for another staff report on the dual immersion Mandarin program.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So there is very limited slides as it relates to this. It's just some bullet points because I wanted to share with the board the work that the district has done thus far and to be able to have a bit of a conversation as interested by the board. And it's very possible for us to bring this back for a future study session should that be the interest of the board. So this is not a comprehensive, detailed report. It is a broad overview so that the board understands the work that's taken place to date. So I would first like to recognize the board because this was a request of the board for us to research and review options for implementation into a dual Mandarin immersion program. And so leading that charge out of our Ed Services team has been Sylvia Rivas and Miriam Kim and Teresa Healy. We also have a full team of people, which we call our China delegation team, and we have a meeting actually on Friday of this week with that full group as well. And so the information tonight is brought to the board, again, as a broad overview and to hold a discussion or to gain any input and direction from the board. So our research and review has put us in contact with several agencies who have experience with the implementation of a dual immersion Mandarin program. As the board knows, we have two Spanish dual immersion programs, but the implementation of a Mandarin language program is very different from Spanish. And so we reached out to many different agencies and individuals for support and assistance, which included, but of course is not limited to, the San Diego County Office of Education, San Diego State University, San Diego Unified School District, the Lakeside School District, the Fremont Unified School District, the Los Angeles County Office of Education. We have local school districts to us, as well as local after-school Chinese programs that we've been talking with, Cal State Long Beach, the College Board, the Ministry of Education, the Republic of China, and National Taipei University of Education. Again, there are more. That just kind of gives a broad flavor from across the state as well as abroad. So in our conversations, we've explored the following items that are bulleted up there that I wanted to share with the board. And I'll chunk the first two together from an instructional model as well as percentage of time. So there are two, because this is a very different structure than what we have in our Spanish dual immersion program. And so there are two prominent instructional models in a dual immersion Mandarin program. It would be a 90-10 model or a 50-50 model. So because learning Mandarin is much more challenging because of symbols or pictographs, all of the programs that we've been in contact with would recommend that we implement a 50-50 model. So the difference would be our students in a 90-10 model, our students would spend 90% of their day learning the language and 10% of their day in English learning content. Because there's a difficulty learning content at the same time of learning the language because there's not recognizable in terms of letters and an easy correlation for language. That's a 90-10 model. A 50-50 model is where 50% of your instructional day is spent learning the language and 50% of your day is spent in English learning content. During the 50% time of Mandarin, they're learning the language with a limited time on academic content, which generally includes the social sciences or social studies or history. And then in the other 50% of the instructional day, which is taught in English, the content areas such as English language arts, English language development, math, science are all taught in English. In some programs, there are two teachers, one speaking only in Mandarin and one speaking only in English. And the students trade. So they'd spend half a day with a Mandarin-speaking teacher and then the other half of the day with an English-speaking teacher or the teacher speaking English to them. And while other programs may only have one teacher and that teacher is all of the teachers are bilingual, but the teacher would spend half of his or her day in Mandarin and half of his or her day in English. And so based on our research, the recommended model which would be to have two teachers. And so the students know that this is the teacher I speak Mandarin with and this is the teacher I speak English with. If that is not possible, it can still be done with a single teacher. As we further explored the instructional model, we looked at the presentation of the written language of Mandarin and whether or not, or Chinese, whether or not we wanted to explore a traditional writing or simplified writing. And so the recommendation and most of the programs, not all, but most of the programs that we researched do use a simplified version, including our after-school Chinese programs that we have in the district. And so as the research has told us, and I'm sure there are folks that know far more that can help us, but in the late 1950s, in an effort to increase the literacy rate, resulted in the People's Republic of China making the decision to simplify the written Chinese language, making it easier for the general population. Thus, two distinct versions of written Chinese came into being, the traditional and the simplified Chinese. The simplified Chinese writing differs in two ways from the traditional writing. One is a reduction of the number of strokes per character, and two is the reduction of the number of characters in common use. So two different characters would now be written as one. So it is simplified. And again, most but not all dual immersion programs, as well as after-school programs, use simplified. So as we also look at percentage of time and the instructional model, a year prior to the implementation of a full dual immersion program, which would begin at the kindergarten level, the recommendation has been made by some for us to begin or to explore a language program at the school. So the language program would provide an opportunity for all students in the school, not just those in a dual immersion program, exposure to Mandarin. The program would look very similar to the Spanish language program that is currently offered at Yabara and at Oswald. And so the students in the school, all students in the school, transitional kindergarten or kindergarten through grade 6, would have 1 hour of Mandarin per week. And so a teacher would come in and they would teach the students 1 hour per week of Mandarin. And that model would continue when the dual immersion program is implemented. So it would be done. And year one would be the language program. Year two, starting in kinder or TK and kinder, potentially TK, K, and one, would be the dual immersion program while the language program continues and goes forward. It helps, based on many of the schools that we spoke to and interacted with, it talked about building a culture in the school and allowing exposure to the language for all students, not just those that enter into the most rigorous program. So I'm going to pause for a minute. And those two, does the board have any input or questions or comments related to the instructional program or percentage of time based on that broad overview? We have not, and so location is probably 6 bullets down for us to talk about, so we have not yet determined a specific site.
You know, when I looked at some...
Can you turn your mic on for me?
When I've seen some of the other programs, because of some volunteering work, there seems to be two major motivations for kids to get involved in a Mandarin immersion program. One is they don't want to take it after school, so it's easier taking it during school hours. But the second one is those that want to eventually go into business and work and later on in life, where knowing Mandarin would give them a heads up on other, you know, students applying for the same job.
And that is evidenced. A lot of it is culturally based on what the, because we're talking about 4 and 5 year olds starting a program. They're not sure what they want to do in life yet. Yeah. So it's the parents' influence of enrolling them in a program to start as well, and curiosity of language.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I'd like to share a few thoughts I have with you. For two models, there are two 90% and 10% model, or 50-50% model, which is 50% English, 50% Mandarin, or 90% target language, which is the Chinese, and 10% and then 10% English. That's based on the community or based on the background of the kids. If your community or your background, the kids' background is most of all the kids are from Chinese-speaking families. That means when the kids get home, they can get help. If that's the case, and usually they use 50-50%. If the community, the kids are, most of them are non-Chinese speaking families, the kids get home and there's no way, the parents, there's no way to help them in Chinese. And if that's the case, then the models better choose the 90-10. The schools in Utah, and Utah is very commonly provided a dual immersion program. And in Utah, most of the kids are non-Chinese speaking, and most of them are 90-10. So that's the way to choose the way model. I think in Roland Heights, that depends. Sometimes depends on the enrollment. If the enrollment is most of the families of Chinese speaking, then we can use 50% or 50%. And the other another thing I need to share with you is the dual immersion program for the first year. We're always starting from kindergarten, from the lowest grade level, and keep moving up, adding one grade level each year. So the first year, if we use we choose the 50%, 50-50, then we're going to have two classrooms. One and two classrooms and one Chinese teacher and one English teacher, and a switch on the two classrooms. Is that the way? I think that's the way to have the program to start. And the second year, and we are going to have a first grade and a kindergarten, which is the four classrooms. Kids are dual immersion kids, and then keep going, and we're going to reach sixth grade. At that time, we're going to have 12 classrooms, dual immersion programs. So, in other words, we're going to have about 250 kids in a campus are dual immersion kids. Then about a half of the population are the dual immersion kids. So how are we going to handle this? That we need to think in the beginning of the time. Then we need staff. We need because we don't have six Mandarin Chinese teachers now. We have to hire six more teachers, and the students too. If the campus is size of about 500 kids, and they're going to be 50% are dual immersion kids. So that may be a problem we need to see up front. So
you're sneaking ahead of the slides there. We talk about staffing.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
I just have one question. This is to Mr. Chen. Would you say the vast majority of Chinese in our area want to speak Mandarin as opposed to Taiwanese? Because we're talking about a
Taiwanese speak Mandarin, because Mandarin is the official common language of Chinese. The people from Taiwan, from Hong Kong, speak Mandarin, and all of these people are willing to learn Mandarin instead of Taiwanese or Cantonese.
Yeah, so mainland China, Singapore, and Taiwan is all Mandarin.
Yeah, all Mandarin.
And then Hong Kong is Mandarin or Cantonese, okay. Mm-hmm. for the oral language, the primary oral language. But it is different who uses traditional versus simplified in those areas. So if we continue on in looking at partnerships, in our conversations, which have gone great depth with many of the folks that we've either met with in person or spoken to on the phone, have talked about the need for strong partnerships. And as Mr. Chen has just alluded to, as it relates to staff, materials, and so forth, which we'll continue to cover. So the individuals that we've spoken with have shared a deep need to have strong partnerships with colleges, universities, and agencies in China, including the Confucius Institute, the Amity Institute, and the Ministry of Education in Taiwan. So there are obviously some political pieces that need to be considered as we look at a dual immersion program. When we spoke with the schools, for instance, in Utah, the schools in Utah do partner almost entirely with the Confucius Institute. The schools and the districts in San Diego partner both with the Confucius Institute as well as agencies in Taiwan. And so there's equal representation of perhaps some differing opinions or different political positions. But what they said is that those partnerships were absolutely key and necessary for acquiring staff, materials, and resources. And so that was an important part that I wanted to be able to share with the board, because we haven't needed to develop those partnerships for a Spanish dual immersion program. In Spanish, the textbook publishers that we purchase our textbooks through publish a Spanish version and an English version, and we're able to purchase our same textbooks in Spanish. That will not be the case for Mandarin. So we will need to purchase supplemental and additional instructional materials in Mandarin. And it will not come from a state-adopted textbook publisher. And we don't have, when we talked with the folks in San Diego and so forth in terms of looking at where do they acquire their materials, both locally here at local school districts as well as the ones that we spoke to in San Diego, it was through these partnerships that they get their instructional materials. Any comments regarding the development of partnerships? I know that there's been some controversy in the past in our community regarding some of these partnerships.
And I'm not going to restate what I've said in the past, but I have some problems with the Confucius Institute. When one looks at, I think it was Chicago, they got to the point where they had to cut severance because they had to sever their relationship because of the control over content and what they could teach and couldn't teach in order to be a partner with the Confucius Institute. And I would hope that we wouldn't get into a situation like that where they're controlling our content.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments on partnerships? Then we look at materials and resources. So there are, as I shared already, there are no available adopted textbooks that are in Mandarin in California to date. So all materials and resources would be needed to be purchased elsewhere and outside of our current RUSD adopted materials. And this is where it has been strongly noted that instructional materials for language acquisition and in social science would come from partners both in the United States and from China. When we look at staffing, so let me go back to materials. Materials are not also quick to be expeditiously acquired. So it's not something where we can quickly call our textbook publisher and say, can you send us 4 copies of that? We would need to really spend some time looking at the materials, particularly some of the concerns that the board has presented regarding what's the content within the material, and we would need to have a team and do some analysis of that content. Perhaps that would be, I mean, that's a recommendation. When we look at staffing, adding dual immersion program would have a cost to the district for staff and for materials, for curriculum resources, and potentially for consultants. It's recommended that there be a consultant or a teacher on special assignment for up to a year before implementation to develop that curriculum, the lesson plans, community outreach, and program planning. So that ties in with some of the things that we've spoken about regarding looking at what materials would be taught, what materials would be used in the classroom. And this teacher could also be present to provide that language instruction that was spoken about earlier in the year prior to full implementation, as discussed in that instructional model item. There also are some programs that have paraprofessional support that assist, and most of these aides come from a partnership either with Confucius, Amity, or Ministry of Education that provide intern or aides that are at little or no cost to the district, and it's done on an annual agreement. So you sign an agreement, you often pay for the visa for them to come to the United States. Often the paraprofessionals live with a host family, but there is no cost for salary for them. And so the districts that we have spoken to all were utilizing some sort of support for staff, both for credentialed teachers as well as paraprofessional support if they have they don't all have paraprofessionals in the classroom. When we look at location, so determining the best school location for a new program is always very critical. And so this evening, later in our agenda, the board's being asked to approve an agreement regarding a facilities master plan and really looking at all of our facilities in our district. And having those items outlined before starting a new program would be advantageous, but timing isn't always perfect. It's important for the district to consider the location, as Carrie had mentioned, in terms of growth of program. And so a school that could sustain growth, because if not all resident students are interested in a Mandarin program, they would participate in an English-only program, but the school would have the capacity to build up through grade 6. The one difference, potentially, Carrie, that I would add to what you said is that there is a pretty significant attrition rate in dual immersion programs. It's higher in Mandarin than it is in Spanish. And so oftentimes students will complete the primary grades, but they drop the program when they get to third, fourth grade. We do see an attrition rate that is significant in Spanish, and what our data compared to the data of Mandarin has shown that the attrition rate or the dropout rate, leaving the Mandarin dual program for an English-only program after primary elementary, is greater in Mandarin than it has been in Spanish. Again, that's not in our schools, but I would believe that that would have some accurate, I mean, some transferable information that's there. It's also, you know, important for the district to look at the location as it pertains to the neighborhood school, potential traffic patterns, because they would be commuters in many cases. Would this program be best served on the north side of our district or the south side of the district? And looking at overall existing attendance boundaries as well. And so the thought process is, you know, is there a preference from the board perspective regarding north side or south side of the district? And because there are pros and cons to each, we have identified schools in our district that we believe, based on size of the school, could absorb a dual immersion program and any increase in capacity. So we have identified schools, but we have not, as to your question, Mr. Mackin, identified the school.
They would have to provide their own transportation to get to this school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I would assume that would be an issue with some families. So mm-hmm. I don't know. We'd have to see where the concentration is and who wants to, you know, be part of the program, and then see where we can make room that they can travel mm-hmm. the least amount.
Mm-hmm. And some of that could be, as we're looking at planning, is developing, and many of the schools that we spoke to is spending time doing community outreach. Mm-hmm. One, making sure that the community is really interested in the program and will support the program, not in the short term, but in the long term. Mm-hmm. And where is the greatest concentration of folks that might be interested? Mm-hmm. Sometimes in that survey, and there was a school and a principal in San Diego County that we spoke to, And part of it's difficult because you are talking with many of our current students who've aged out from being able to start a Mandarin program, because you're starting with the youngest students. So it will provide data. It's not always 100% spot on, because I couldn't speak for my own children because they aren't of age to be able to start. They've aged out. And then budget and anticipated costs. So we are looking at the cost of teachers, and they are teaching our students, so it's whether or not they're teaching students in English or they're teaching students in Mandarin. But there is always a cost because the enrollment is lower. And so we anticipate that there is the possibility of needing an additional teacher per grade level as this program ratchets up. Also needing professional development and curriculum. When we looked at estimated curriculum costs and looked at a school, there is a school in Poway that is looking to build this program. They're in a similar position to where we are right now. And in talking with them, they're about 6 months or so ahead of where we are. And they are estimating the curriculum cost to be about $60,000. And then we have our own estimates in terms of our own teacher salaries and what our professional development costs would be. And so when you look at the cost of a teacher plus the benefits and all of the total compensation, we also, though, can weigh that against that there are students that leave our school district to participate in a Mandarin program in other districts. So having a program here would allow us to retain those students. Based on the numbers that I have from student services and to the cost of the program, it wouldn't completely pay for itself. But would more students participate if it was here and they didn't need to leave and potentially, as Mr. Malkin said, drive further to a neighboring school district? There are also some additional costs that are not included, which would be a consultant and a language teacher. If we wanted to offer the language program, then there would be the cost for a language teacher. Either that language teacher and or a consultant that would do all the material and curriculum review. And then last, we look at timeline for implementation. It's recommended that there be a full year of language, of that language program, as I shared earlier, prior to the implementation of a dual program, if that is of interest to the board, as well as Mr. Malkin has said, perhaps surveying and doing more community outreach, spending that time doing that and looking at our curriculum. If the board is interested in continuing to pursue a Mandarin program, then we would potentially look at the 17-18 school year being our language and planning year, and the 18-19 school year is the first year of a true full dual program, starting with transitional kindergarten and kindergarten, or transitional kindergarten, and first grade, and then beginning that program while continuing the language program at the school that's selected. So what are your thoughts?
Have you consulted our neighboring districts? Because all of our neighboring schools offer that already.
Yes, we have.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because they are similar to our situation.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. And they do a 50-50 model.
50 model, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think,
And simplified. They do a 50-50 simplified.
Right, I agree with that. Simplify is the trend. Mm-hmm. And most of the school teachers simplify, and it's easier for the kids to learn.
Yeah, as we've seen in presentations in the past with declining enrollment, and I think that, we need to have programs like this if we want to see our enrollment, to stop declining and to start, going up, that these are things in the community that the community wants. And I think I support it 100%.
How are we going to do this? Are we accepting out of district, other district kids, or how?
Would we for a Mandarin program?
Yeah.
We would,
huh?
Yeah. Well, we do now for our Spanish program or other programs, mm-hmm. our IB World Language program, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be on an inter-district permit. Mm-hmm. They would need to get permission from their district of residence to come to us.
Others.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Donna? The dual immersion, you prefer not to start next year because we don't have enough information or we're not ready?
Well, based on what we have learned in the past 5 months that we've looked at it, it's
It's fairly complicated, as I've provided just a brief overview. could we start it in September or August? Could we? Yes. Would be the level that I believe a board would expect in terms of, when you look at, are we going to survey? How are we going to do community outreach? Where the material is going to come from? Do we want to engage in contracts for partnerships? Those types of things. And then advertising and recruiting. I mean, we're starting our enrollment at this point. So when schools we've spoken to have said that they started now for implementation, not the fall, but the following fall.
Doesn't sound like the kind of thing you can just slap together and throw in there and expect to have anything quality.
Correct?
No. I think if possible, we need to include at least one Mandarin Chinese-speaking staff in our team.
Okay.
Is the ultimate goal that you're trying to teach Chinese-only speaking kids English, or vice versa, or both?
So the ideal dual immersion program has 50% native speakers and 50% English speakers, ideally, because that is then dual immersion. And so you are learning two languages. The demographics play into that a little bit. And Mandarin is a little bit of a different presentation than, like I said, with Spanish. But you are teaching the language to individuals who do not have mastery of the language. So they would be learning Mandarin, and they don't already have mastery of that. Okay, so we will continue the work. Again, we have a meeting on Friday with the delegation team. So we'll continue the work, and I will continue to keep the board updated. But based on the information here, it does not appear we would open a robust program starting in the fall of 17. Is there opinion regarding a language program prior to a dual program? Does the board have any opinion regarding that?
I think that's the best way to go.
I think that's where we should start.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll continue our research and we'll continue to keep the board updated.
And just to piggyback on what Mr. Malkin said, there was a big uproar in one of our neighboring communities because of the Confucius program. So we certainly don't want to invite that kind of a community outrage into our district. I don't know enough about it, but I do know that it was there and they weren't happy.
Perfect.
Well, okay. I just did it here. I just Googled it, and you get a whole list of articles from San Diego Unified to Chicago. Quite a few there, and it mainly deals with restriction of content of teaching.
Correct. Yeah, it's very different than what we're experiencing in the United States. Okay.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
Mitchell. Okay, public comments. Just want to remind you all that remarks are limited to 3 minutes unless extended further by the vote of the board, a maximum of 20 minutes unless extended. Oops, I'm sorry. And a maximum of 20 minutes, a list extended by the board, is allotted for each subject discussed. Ordinarily, board members will not respond to presentations, and no action can be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following a presentation. First speaker is Amy Yerbian.
Good evening, board. My name is Amy Yerbian, and I am a social studies teacher at Roland High School. I stand tonight on behalf of many members of our staff in opposition to removing the grading day at the end of the first semester for us. Yes, it is true that this is a good calendar. However, why can't we make it even a better calendar? Why are we choosing to remove that day for grading? We have been told for years now, to move away from the classic bubble in your answers final. We agree that this is a good idea. Written responses are much more authentic, but they do take a lot of more time to grade. If we give the required written response exams that is being asked of us, it is necessary to get the time to grade each exam, and this is one of the reasons why having the student free day is necessary for us. The cost of not having this day will force teachers to abandon instructional days in order to give a written response assessment and have it graded by this new deadline. We do understand that we see a significant jump in absences on days where elementary and secondary students are out on different days. However, is this a solution worth sacrificing a quality final exam for all students? It does not seem that the district assessment goals align with the calendar that is being proposed that we are approving tonight. We are asking the board to reconsider the removal of this day and to return to having parent conferences day for elementary sites and grading day for secondary sites in place of an additional PD day for the secondary teachers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Amy. Next, we have Shay Lohman.
All right, good evening, board. I want to wish everybody a very happy new year. Welcome back. I hope all of you had a fantastic time with your family over the holidays. I was blessed to have the opportunity to travel to the Christmas markets in Europe with my wife. And as I looked at the bill that came in this week, I have to remember the quote that says that travel is one of the only things in the world where the more you spend, the wealthier you become. And there's a lot of truth to that statement. My travels over the past couple months for both work and pleasure continue to help shape my perspective on our education system. One thing that I do want to share is my amazement over the level of depth of conversation that I was able to have with people from around the world, students from around the world, about the political systems in our countries and the American political system. I worry that many of our nation's students will not be able to stay on par with their peers around the world when it comes to their level of political literacy. This is why we need to be sure that as leaders of the education institutions, that we continue to show a commitment to the social studies, government, economics, psychology, sociology, etc. Our students need to be engaged with regards to the political system around them to make the very important decisions. One such decision that the board may be making tonight is to adopt the school calendar for the 2017-2018 school year. There are many great things with this calendar, and the association does recommend a yes vote on this calendar tonight. But we do have a little bit of hesitation with the regards to the removal of the grading days you heard Ms. Erbian talking about. We fear that with the loss of this grading day, teachers will not be in a position to give the authentic final exams that we'd like to be able to give. I do hope the district continues to engage us with regards to how to adjust to the loss of this day. But with this said, I do want to thank all the participants in the calendar committee who put in many hours to develop and create something that will work well for our students, our staff, and our community. So again, I want to wish everybody a very happy new year, and I look forward to a great 2017. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lohman. Next, we have Roy Humphreys.
Hello, all, and welcome to all you, and for all the fine work you've done in the past. We're looking at New Year, and want to have a happy New Year, and also noting the new attitude that has come to us in the White House, and it's always had dynamic changes to our society. We can only hope that there will be an equally dynamic change in RUSDs, that's Roland Unified School District's, finding of the core values and adhering to them. As to the issue of truth and transparency, we have to pause when noting that Eric Hart, Stuart Moe, and Keith Moore are still on the district website in the various director spots. But we've also noticed, as stated in this meeting here previously, that, hey, you got new guys. Why not introduce them and even put their names in appropriate places on the website and communications means to them as you had done with Eric Hart, etc. Also, it's noting that you can learn something from your neighbors. That's La Puente Hacienda La Puente, which got the $180 million bond issue passed, and now, and it was in the Tribune, by the way, that they're going through a reconfiguration of their school district and noting they're not going to be spending money on schools that should or could be closed. And they're doing a very good job on that. As noted in Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors meeting today, there is a conspiracy of the locals in a fear of the intervention by the new attitude, a national attitude from the White House dealing with illegal immigrants. It is all the feds have to do is turn off the money spigot. And enough said on that. As to note, also in California, must wake up to the fact that you haven't got the bucks to take care of your legal immigrants. And as noted in the Roland Heights Gazette and the Tribune, that California, being the ninth richest state in the union, is 41st as to its evaluation by a very well-known education group, and got a mediocre C minus. And to that, as we additionally noticed that CalPERS could bankrupt everybody. And to that point, you need to start looking into doing international contracting for teacher services, and that will save a huge bunch of money and cure the teacher shortage. Also, as to the language situation, you opened up a can of worms. And I couldn't believe that the administrator here didn't mention Defense Language Institute, which is worldwide known for its language programs. And it was started at Yale University. And thank you very much. There's a lot more to go. The Chinese global television, you can get on Dish Network. You want to find that the Chinese are all over the world, and they are heavy, heavy into Africa. And to learn,
thank you, Mr. Humphreys.
Chinese,
time's up.
It's economics.
Okay, Sharon Carrillo. Your fan club's here.
Yes, yes, my fan club is here of one. Good evening, Board of Education, Dr. Mitchell, Cabinet, and audience. Happy New Year to everyone. We're off to a great start. We're looking forward to even better things. Brandy, on behalf of CSEA, welcome to Roland. We're happy to have you here. Last week, professional development for Classified took place at Nogales High School. There were approximately, correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis, 250 employees in attendance. Thank you. Some of the classes that were offered included Excel Basic and Intermediate, CPI, Behavior Bootcamp, Google Mail and Calendar, Google Docs and Drive, Aries, various nutrition classes, and many others. On Friday, a barbecue was provided with the grilling done by Julie, Dennis, Alex, and Teresa. And a great job they did, too. David and his wife, Terry, were also in attendance serving and did a great job, along with other administrators. I was going to name them, but I didn't want to leave anyone out. But I do have to say that Aubrey was there, and I tried to serve myself, and he said, no, I'm going to do it for you. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Aubrey. Mm-hmm. The trainings were awesome. The feedback was positive, and everyone wants more, and they want them more often. So thank you so much to Julie, Alex, Dennis, and Teresa for making these trainings happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. And last we have Catherine Rodriguez.
Good evening. Good evening, board members, Superintendent Dr. Mitchell, and audience members. I'm Catherine Rodriguez from Family Resource Center. And although last month we were without a coordinator, we continued our programs. So I'm here just to update you on our Adopt-N-Shop, in which we served 83 families and 231 students with about 69 sponsors from Roland Unified School staff, as well as community members and agencies like Ecolab, retired RUSD teachers, Citrus Valley, and we also did Walnut Shop with the Cop with Target and Chili's dinner. And we also had during the week, a cookie lady come and bake cookies with some of the children and their families. So that was also a good thing because some of them don't have the baking tools and stuff. So that was fun. We also finished our homework club at Via Corta in Northam, and we will be starting in February with Roland Elementary and Yerbita. And our liaisons did also help find the families for the Rotary Club holiday baskets, which was also new, but we pulled through at the last minute. And we look forward to receiving our new coordinator. And thanks for Mari supporting us while we were solo. So thank you.
Thank you, Catherine, for all the hard work you and your staff does for families and our kids. Okay, on to the discussion action items. First, the annual financial audit report. Dr. Mitchell?
Need a motion.
Sorry, before you start talking, I need a motion.
So you have to read it.
The board is being asked to review and accept the annual financial audit report for the fiscal year June 30, 2016, as submitted by NIGRO and NIGRO CP. May I have a motion?
I'll move.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Now we'll go to the report.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So this evening, in compliance, the board has received a copy of the audit report, and we have Jeff NIGRO here from NIGRO and NIGRO to share the audit report, the process, the findings, and any information, as well as to answer the questions that the board has. And then Alex Flores and Aubrey Craig have information for the board as well regarding the remedies that the district has put in place regarding from feedback based on our auditors.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the board. Thanks for inviting me here to present the district's audit report. I noticed the crowd got considerably smaller. I thought they were all going to be here to hear the audit, but thanks for those of you who stuck around. I would like to talk a little bit about the audit process. You have in front of you a copy of the audit report, which is the end result of about 500 hours worth of work on our side, and it's not just a one-time process. The audit process actually begins as early as the spring when we're consulting with the district on planning issues. We're doing a lot of in-house scheduling. Our audit team has to meet and brainstorm and discuss risk areas that are general to most school districts, but also specifically to this district. And this year, obviously, there were a couple of key risks. First of all, this was our firm's first year doing the audit for the district. So after several years with the previous firm, you know, a first year with a new firm can always be interesting. Our team also, you know, noted that there had been some recent management turnover. And in fact, you know, the director of fiscal position was vacated before we even began our field work. So that put some additional challenges on the business office. So then we do the first phase of field work begins when we go out to the school site. So before we even set foot in the district office, we go out and visit a sample of your schools doing attendance testing. And believe me, the attendance clerks at the schools love it when the auditors show up. They just look forward to it so much. But we go through and we spend about a half a day with each of them looking at their attendance procedures because obviously attendance drives your funding. And so the state has us take a very heavy look at that. So we have to look at a sampling of school sites all the way from elementary up to high school, continuation, and everything. And then we also go to some of the ASBs and we look at the student body accounting because those are high-risk areas wherever there's a lot of cash and a lot of different people involved in the process. So we go out to high schools and we spend some time with them going through their processes. The point of it is that, you know, we're not the bad guys. I know you hear the word auditors, and people conjure up images of IRS auditors coming in, kicking in doors, and entering with guns drawn, and it's not like that at all. I like to think of the audit process as similar to going to visit a doctor. You know, you're going because you need a thorough exam, and you want them to be thorough, and maybe they're going to poke and prod and ask uncomfortable questions, but at the end of the day, when they give you a clean bill of health, you'll know that they were thorough in the process and didn't just give you a cursory exam. So with that in mind, you know, we spend a lot of time here at the district office, and we the days of the audit just being localized to just the business folks and the accounting folks are gone. You know, I'm sure many members of the district can attest that we were, yes, definitely spent a lot of time in the business office, but we also visit folks in the HR department and risk management, purchasing. We interview people from IT, and we talk to the superintendent. We talk to one of the members of the board. So it's a very thorough process, interviewing a lot of people, and we ask questions to find out where their concerns might be or areas of, you know, things that they want us to focus on. And, you know, we do a lot of those one-on-one interviews, and they'll lead us to different areas. And interestingly, this year, the district did direct us to look into a lot of specific areas, too. You know, we have our areas that we typically look at that we know are going to be high risk anyway. But it's always revealing when someone in the district asks us to focus on a particular area as well because there's concerns there. So that all takes time. Like I said, it's a culmination of about 500 hours worth of work, all said. So the end result is this audit report. You know, it's essentially the primary objective is for us to give an opinion on your financial statement. So we're giving what we call an unqualified opinion, which means the financial statements you see here are prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So you remember back in September when you adopted those unaudited actuals, we audit those numbers, basically, and we're telling you that those are, you know, reliable numbers. There's a lot of other information in the report. I'm sure you can read it, and you can ask me questions if you'd like. But I know the page, the part that everyone loves to go to first is in the back, and it's the findings section. So I'll spare you all the suspense, and we'll just jump to those very quickly. And as I said, a number of factors, this being our first year doing the audit for the district after having, you know, several years with the same firm previously, was one risk. And new management and vacancies in management was also another risk area. And the size of the district, when those three things combined, we were expecting there to be some issues. So the fact that there's some findings here is not a surprise at all. In fact, I think if we had come in with a report with no findings, I think you would have been right to question us. But some of these issues are fairly minor, and they're really more, and some of them, frankly, are things that district brought to our attention before we even set foot in. And also some of these are things that have already been corrected, but I'll let them address that. But just to go through them quickly, the first finding, 2016-001, and let me point out that numbering convention, that -001, doesn't imply that we thought there might be as many as 999 findings. It's that's dictated by the federal government. The uniform guidance says we have to do it that way. But yeah, the first one had to do with the cash receipt process over transportation, you know, and just having to do with procedural things there. And so I think, again, I think the district's already, yes, is already. So, again, a lot of these things are ancient history. Some of these are things that we've noted back in June, July, when we came out and did our visits. District's already taken corrective action, but we are reporting them in here to you. Number two, having to do with the reconciliation of retiree benefits. Mr. Bickler is well aware that some districts have, you know, certain payments that they receive from retirees for a portion of their retiree health care. The district may cover a portion. But sometimes the districts don't actively monitor and follow up that they're receiving those payments from retirees and how much they owe and that type of thing. And so that's gotten cleaned up. The deal with the Cal cards, you know, as an auditor, I'm just naturally nervous when it comes to credit cards. I don't like them. Well, obviously, they can be very beneficial, but at the same time, they can also be very high risk. So having better controls over that, controlling the number of cards that are being outstanding and the procedures on who can use them and when and for how much, that was our recommendation there. Number four with the change orders came out of our testing of the process for selecting vendors for construction projects. And our firm follows a very strict interpretation of the public contract code, which says that no change order may exceed 10%. There are others who interpret that 10% rule to be a cumulative 10%. We're sticking to our guns on this one. We think that the change order cumulative 10% is the way to go because it's a more conservative approach. But anyway, that's been brought to the district's attention, and I think that was a one-time project anyway. Number five had to do with a single employee. We wrote this finding up as, you know, it may read that it's a district-wide issue, but I did want to point out that it was just noted for one employee who had the ability to approve their own leave time, which obviously we thought was a conflict, so that's been addressed now. The next section we get into the federal findings, and because, you know, a portion of our audit, we have to look at federal programs. So one of them had to do with the cafeteria fund, and, you know, if you're going to have a problem, have the problem of having too much money, right? So, but the federal guidelines do limit the amount of funds that you can have in the food program. It's supposed to be a break-even program. The idea is that if you have too much money, then you're either charging too much or you're not spending enough. So the district's working on getting a plan in place for that. Then we get into the next section, which are the state findings, and this is because the state gives us a big laundry list of areas they want us to look at for compliance. Attendance was one of the ones I mentioned earlier, but there's a number of other areas. And one of them is when we're out at the sites, we're also looking at the instructional time being offered, looking at the bell schedules. And this area was something that was brought to our attention before we even went out. The district had noted it, brought it to our attention, said, you're going to find this eventually. So they were ahead of it. Unfortunately, it was past the point where anything could be done about it. And it just had to do with a quirk in the way the calendar and the bell schedule was constructed for that particular school. I don't expect to see that problem again. It was quite expensive, unfortunately, but I do believe that that's going to be monitored very closely. And then finally, the school accountability report cards. That finding is really just I hate to say it, it's a pretty fairly common finding that we find in a lot of school districts, but it's really just a matter of the process of putting together those report cards and matching them up with the supporting documents. So those are the findings. Really, the instructional minutes one is the only one that had any financial impact on the district. There's no other lasting consequences from any other findings. Some of them are just, like I said, procedural things. Following those findings, you'll see some other things that look like findings, but those are actually us reporting back to you the status of prior audit findings. So if we looked at your 14-15 audit report, we have to report back the district implemented or not implemented those findings. And then finally in the back, there's some other comments. Those are not findings. Let me point that out. Those are some issues that were discussed with management during the course of the audit, but they weren't significant enough for us to report them as audit findings. So that's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have at this time.
Thank you, Board.
I have a question for Dr. Mitchell. When One of what you're finding is the cash handling of the transportation. Since cash handling is very easy or have problem, or we need to pay more attention on how they handle it. So, and it's not only one department has handling cash for other school sites. How are we, do we check the other locations who they had that handling cash, and such as like a school lunch cash or other places?
So, yes, we do as well as the auditors do. So the auditors do the cafeteria fund and they do the ASBs, which both have cash. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
I have some comments, but I think I'll wait until after Alex does his presentation.
Hey, there's one more question, Donna.
Was there something with the ASB funds? No? Okay.
There were some comments in the back.
That's what I read.
That were about ASBs. Yeah. We refer to this as our management letter. These are items that we brought to management's attention during the audit. And they're in the audit report because, well, two reasons. One is the state controller requires us to put any comments that we make to management in their audit report. But two, our professional standards also require that we communicate those things to the governing board as well. They're just things that we didn't think were important enough. They didn't rise to the level of concern that made us put them as findings.
Got it. Thank you.
Any red flags that we need to be aware of other than what you've mentioned? We're board members that aren't bookkeepers.
No. If there were red flags, they would be front and center.
Staff was cooperative. If you asked for something, they got it for you. They didn't try not to get you what you wanted.
Well, let's put it this way. The staff that were there were very cooperative, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So, the only difficulty we had was, like I said, just, with an unexpected vacancy in the fiscal department, it made finding some documents a bit challenging at first, but eventually everybody was able to get what we needed.
Thank you.
All right.
So I've asked Alex Flores to also share with the board the work that he and Aubrey Craig have put into place to address the things that our auditor has found.
First of all, I'd like to thank Jeff and his team for the really in-depth, independent audit that was performed, and also for taking the time to interview us beforehand. I know he interviewed at the time President Angelina Pride, Dr. Mitchell, myself, and we had specific areas of concerns that we wanted Jeff and his team to look into. And I know, speaking to you, President Evan Camp, that you're looking forward to having those conversations too on some areas too. And he's very open to that. I really appreciate the extra time that he did looking into these areas. Some of these areas were kind of self-reported in the sense we saw some areas of some concerns, and as we were going through before the audit, we were making some changes in place. For example, the cash receipt and transportation, we no longer receive cash there. And one of the big issues there was that we had one person that was receiving the cash, reconciling the cash, and depositing the cash. We've hired an additional position in transportation. In addition to that, Aubrey has put some things into play with the triplicate form, numbered receipt book, maintaining a log for all bus passes, and Aubrey will be meeting with the new transportation director also on a monthly basis to review these items also. Reconciliation of the retiree benefits, that was another item that we saw through the year. When there was some staff changing without a risk manager and also a key player there, that we found that there was some reconciliation that was not taking place. So we divided those duties within HR department with the benefits and also with a new position where we reassign the responsibilities in fiscal, where someone now is on a monthly basis reconciling the reports to making sure that the proper payments are being made. And then on the risk management side with Dennis's work is also making sure that everyone's being charged the right amount of their benefits too. Then again, Aubrey is welcomed and looking forward to meeting also and taking that task and really overseeing that so there's a checks and balances put in place for this. Cal cards, we have over 100 Cal cards that are out, and we're looking at developing new policies. We'll be taking all the Cal cards back and actually just for specific use of travel only, a very handful of Cal cards being in place, and maybe also a Cal card for emergency purchases for maintenance in case if there's a weekend purchase that needs for a weekend, open up school on over the weekend. But those policies will be put into place and also given to all the people that have Cal cards at this time. Change orders. As Jeff mentioned, there's two schools of thought of change orders, and his firm takes the very conservative approach of 10% cumulative. While different legal opinions and one of our attorneys and the past auditor took the opinion of 10% per change order. That's why this was never a finding before, because actually this is for the Nogales project. It was 2015 that it went over 10%. So this would have been a finding several years ago if that conservative approach was taken. Regardless of that, we want to work with making sure we don't go over 10%. And we're very confident with future project with constructability reviews done before a project starts, that we won't run into those excessive change orders. And that's why specifically I made that comment with the Roland project and how well things are going, because we did a constructability report and we took the time to review before going out to bid. That's a different process that didn't take place for the Nogales project. The improper procedures and controls relating to leaves is another item that we wanted to look into so that to make sure that everyone has the checks and balances for their leaves and their time that they're off. The cafeteria fund reserves, in 2014, a spending plan was created, so that's going to be reviewed and possibly redone with the director, Maria Davila. And we may be also working with school services to get some additional assistance there to making sure that it's clear, because sometimes you can spend on certain items, you can't spend on other items. We want to make sure we have a clear understanding what the spending plan, we could spend those funds down so that we can actually, it's a good thing to have excess funds. I do want to note that the board has not increased, we've not increased the amount of the lunches in the past few years. We've applied for that waiver so that we don't increase it, at least for the past 2 years, because I know we had to turn that waiver into Jeff. The instructional day, this was a situation with a bell schedule during parent conferences where we were short 9 minutes. What we have put into place is previously the principals would sign off, turn it to Ed Services review it. Now we're doing our checks and balance where Ed Services will receive it first, then my office and Aubrey will review all the minutes, and we will send it back to the principals to sign off again to making sure that this is what the bell schedule is. There is no deviations, there's no changes. So that to make sure that we're consistent with that. And for the school accountability report card, this will be another item where there will be another checks and balances where the supervisor will be submitting and inputting the information. Then I will be receiving the list also and reviewing line by line. Matter of fact, I met with Sylvia today. She was here earlier. So that she's actually doing it herself too, so we can sit together and making sure that we report correctly. Moving forward, though, best practice moving forward, and I'm very, very encouraged and very excited about Aubrey and his experience as we move forward to develop manuals and procedures that he will be developing and implementing and putting forward and actually educating our staff also on proper procedures, like we bring up ASB, things like that. We also want to develop internal audit procedures to ensure compliance in all areas by internally selecting different items to review for compliance. And that's something that Aubrey is planning to do, to review other departments to making sure that we're compliant at all times by randomly selecting items. We also want to provide quarterly updates to the board on these findings and on the status of these findings and what steps we're taking
and how we are complying with these findings so that it's very transparent and as we grow and as the district grows, making sure that we comply correctly. And that's all that I have.
Thank you for responsibly responding to the complaints so that hopefully next year we'll have a better report.
They will be looking at these right away, first thing they do.
Any other comments or questions?
I have a comment. First of all, I want to thank the staff in the department there because I know what it's to go through an audit is stressful at least and to have all the other work to do and then to be short on staff. Really appreciate all their hard effort to get this to get us through this process. You know, my background's in performance improvement, and I look at these as opportunities for improvement rather than as deficiencies. And I try to look at the bigger picture. And in the report, it states here that management of Roland Unified School District is responsible for establishing and maintaining effective internal control over compliance. And I like audits like this done by an outside objective group because it tells me whether or not my internal control program is effective or not. And their findings basically tells me where I have my weaknesses. And I think that when you start addressing each individual deficiency with a plan, that you tend to lose the overall bigger picture. Example, the 111 Cal cards, I think it was. Yes. It's easy to call back 100 Cal cards and have 11 Cal cards out there. And that solves, quote, the problem. But does it solve the problem? You know, are the Cal cards out there because it's taking too long to process a request to get certain items? And it's just easier to use a Cal card? And if that's the case, then bringing the Cal cards back just creates a bigger problem. So we have to understand why are there 111 Cal cards out there. And so I would hope that for each of these deficiencies, we try to understand the background behind the deficiency and what could be causing that and seeing if we need to change, you know, certain operational procedures, if necessary to tighten them up, to expedite them or whatever.
You're absolutely correct with the Cal cards where there was concerns with the time frame of receiving items for the school site. Roseanne has done a wonderful job in the past 2 years here in actually increasing the efficiency of bringing the items that have been ordered in a timely fashion, increasing the amount of deliveries. So the need, if there was one before for that, is no longer present. We look at Cal cards for the future to be just for travel basis only. Okay.
Exactly. So, and then if you'd be writing manuals and procedures, if those could be integrated then into this overall internal compliance, and if staff's involved, and then you have an agreement with staff that these are our expectations, and then do sample audits, hopefully that will make us even a better survey in another year or two. But, you know, try to look at the internal control program and how these are indicators on weaknesses within that program and what we need to tighten up on it.
And our view is to see this as an opportunity to improve and grow, not just in that one area, but holistically throughout the whole compliance areas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Malcolm. Ms. Freeman?
Jeff, just want to say thank you. What a great job. 500 hours. Oh, my goodness. It was very thorough. And all your comments.
They weren't all my hours.
No, I knew that. And then, Dennis, Alex, I really appreciate you telling us what the district plans on doing so that these will be fixed, and I'm very happy to hear that. Thank you very much.
Any more questions, Board? Thank you both very much. Next, we go on to items. Oh, sorry. Okay, we had a motion on the floor in a second. So the motion was to accept the annual financial audit report for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2016, as submitted by Negro and Negro. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passed 5-0. Thanks. Okay. Next, we move on to item 6B, Facilities Master Plan Contract. It's an action item. We're being asked to approve the contract between Architects for Education Incorporated and Roland Unified School District for the provision of a master plan, facilities master's plan. Can I have a motion?
I make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed 5-0. Next, Prop 39 Energy Conservation Planning Study Contract Agreement. This also is an action item. We're being asked to approve the contract between Climactic Energy Services, LLC, to provide a Prop 39 Energy Conservation Planning Study. May I have a motion?
Make second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passed 5-0. Next, we have an independent contractor agreement between Blue Water Educational Consultants and the Roland Unified School District. I need a motion to approve the independent contractor agreement between Blue Water Educational Consulting and the Roland Unified School District for the term January 11, 2017 through June 1, 2017 for the provision of training to sustain the alternate learning center model and an alternative to suspension model. May I have a motion?
I'll move.
Second? I'll second. Discussion?
Yes. I read about these, and the alternate learning center, the students will get counseling based on their particular need, and they can stay after school and help with a whole bunch of assignments. I think that's terrific. And then when school students are suspended for 2 to 5 days, then they will be able to go to a 5-hour each day of their suspension and get the academics, which I've always thought, here we suspend these kids, they go home and they do nothing. So they're kind of like rewarded probably. But this is outstanding, and I just wanted to comment that I really like these programs. Thank you for bringing them to the district.
I agree. Any more discussion? Dave?
Yeah, I just have a comment. And some of this was already answered by earlier discussions I've had. But, we have at Nogales Success Program, and then we're developing this ALC-LTS program, and then we have HOPES at Santana. We have HOPES. And, it sounds like it's being resolved, but I have a concern of, how many programs do we need? At what point do we consolidate these? And I understand that HOPES is being consolidated into the ALC-LTS program. So that would help solve that problem. But as we move ahead, I think, we need to try to identify a program that meets what our goal is and not to have 3 or 4 different programs all with their all individual consultants providing consultation. Success sounds like it's doing really well. I finally was able to find Blue Water background on information on them. It sounds like it's a great program. It sounds like there's a lot of success with their program. So it does sound like a good program, similar to Success at Nogales. So maybe as we move along, we can identify more of a common program to meet these needs where we can consolidate all these.
Well, my experience is that you get programs going, and maybe there's something better out there. So before you just eliminate one, you bring the other one in so you can make some decisions down the road. I don't know if that's your thinking, Dr. Mitchell.
No, multiple programs is intentional because we're scaffolding. Mm-hmm. And so there are students who need different levels of intervention for behavioral or academic or attendance, social emotional needs. And so there is not an intent to remove the Success Academy from right. Nogales High School. That's a local school site intervention program that is wildly successful. However, there are students in the Success Academy who still need a greater level of intervention. We're remaining perhaps on a comprehensive high school campus even with the detailed support that that program provides, is still not yet enough for them to reach their full potential, and so they need yet a different level. So there are a variety of different levels of intervention. It is expected that all of our school sites have site-based intervention models to meet the needs of the students in their home school or their school of attendance. It's when it reaches a different level that remaining at their comprehensive school setting is still not allowing them to reach their fullest potential for whatever reason that students are going through in their particular life, where we need to have a greater level of intervention. And so we, using our special education terms, you keep them in the least restrictive environment for as long as they are successful, and then we perhaps need to look at different programs. So a variety of programs is intentional. You are 100% accurate, Mr. Malkin, that the HOPES program is an independent study program, and the Alternative Learning Center would be taking the place of that. So we wouldn't have HOPES and ALC. The teachers from HOPES would be incorporating ALC and within their scaffolding even more.
Okay.
How are we going to evaluate the result or measure the achievement?
So in terms of looking at the program, you saw Mrs. Healy provide the information regarding the LCAP and the different rubrics. Much about student success, both in academics and in behavior, is done through, you know, you saw the colors and things like that. That would be one measure of being able to evaluate, is looking on a very global scale. But as we work with Blue Water, should the board approve this contract, we will now develop with them very specific program for the students enrolled in Unified and train our staff to work with our students regarding some of these issues based on the success that they have had previously, which includes a evaluation tool, because we also need to know, are we successful or are we not, and what do we need to tweak or change? And a lot of that has to do with, are we preparing our students for the future and are they graduating from our schools or are we losing them?
Thank you. If a family opts for the ALC or ATS program, is the transportation to that school site the responsibility of the family then?
Yes. So there are some options or some discussions that could be had, but on a general overarching, yes.
Any more questions or comments? We have a motion on the floor. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Pass 5-0. What? Oh, I'm sorry. Any abstains or abstain?
I will be abstaining from this vote. Being that I work in education, I have a lot of connections with different individuals, and I have written a letter of recommendation for one of the individuals who works with this organization in the past, not recently. So I just feel, to err on the side of caution, I will abstain.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Pride. I should have called on you. Okay, so the vote right now. Let's vote again to make sure I have it right. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 4. Those opposed? None. Abstentions?
Aye.
Okay. 1 abstention. Okay, next is increase the employee business mileage reimbursement rate. May I have a motion to approve an increase in employee mileage reimbursement currently at 50 cents a mile to the recommended new rate of 53.5 cents a mile.
And make a motion.
I'll second.
Any discussion?
This is the federal standard.
IRS, that's yeah. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed 5-0. Now we're on board policies. The first one is, I need a motion to adopt the new board policy, 1311 civility policy. May I have a motion?
I make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Was it a late aye?
Yeah, it was a late
one. Was opposed? It passes 5-0. Now we have a second reading and adoption of revised board policy 6111. May I have a motion to receive the reading? This is not an adoption, is it?
It's second reading.
Okay, sorry. May I have a motion to receive the second reading and adoption of the revised board policy 6111?
I made a motion to receive the second reading.
I'll second.
Any discussion here?
I'm sorry, what was the number again?
It was 6111. This is the second reading adoption of, this is the school calendar. And it's item 6G.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I'm missing it.
This is the board policy. Was there discussion?
No. I didn't highlight it.
This calendar. Okay.
This is the calendar. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed 5-0. Revised board policy 0450, comprehensive safety plan. This is a discussion item only. Can I have a motion just to receive for first reading the revised board policy 0450, comprehensive safety plan? It's just a motion to receive.
Okay, I'll move.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion?
I have a discussion. Yeah. On the first page, it's crossed off, the board shall review the comprehensive district-wide and or school safety plan in order to ensure compliance with state law, board policy, and administrative regulation. I would suggest that we don't cross that off so that we could vote as a board to make sure we have those.
So as it is the pleasure of the board how you would like this policy to be, so we rely on the California School Boards Association for input regarding policies. And the CSBA policy presented tonight in the revised format what is presented to the board this evening is exactly what CSBA recommends. And the reason for that is because the board, by education code, still must do those things. It is still required. And what happens in a board policy is the very overarching expectation, and following each board policy is an administrative regulation that says the specific steps that must happen. So when this policy was originally written, the administrative regulations bled into the policy piece of it. And so CSBA is recommending that we separate those two actions. The board will still see our safety plans. The board still needs to have a discussion because the education code requires it to look at how the safety plan addresses the needs of each school and how the school site counselor safety planning committee, et cetera, as written here. So it is not saying that the board would not do that. It becomes part of the administrative regulations as required by the education code.
On page two, it says it's crossed off, each school shall review and update its safety plan by March 1st.
That is required by the education code. Again, that would be in an administrative regulation. There's not the ability for us to escape that.
But is the board responsible for safety as far as us voting, and that's taking it away?
No. The board still must, by ed code, the board has to approve the plan. So, again, the details, the specifics, the information, when it says... let me share with the board.
We're crossing off the board shall approve the plan at a regularly scheduled meeting.
But the board must approve the plan, and that will be in the administrative regulations because it is based on law. So it the education code, when you read education code 35294.21, which is addressed in the policy, so the policy says that the board shall follow the education code. It talks about the timeline and the details, followed by, and it's referenced in there as well, Ed Code 35294.22, before a school safety plan can be approved, that the board must look at and have a discussion of how the school safety plan addresses the needs of the school and pupils within that school, etc. And it also has a requirement that those come to the board
by March 1st. And Teresa Healy also has some input.
If I can clarify about the formatting, I think that's causing some of the confusion. So on the second page where we talk about the comprehensive safety plan, and there's the crossout that says each school shall forward the safety plan to the board for approval, education code 32288. That's mm-hmm. crossed out. That will be removed. However, the next line says the comprehensive safety plans shall be reviewed and updated by March 1st of each year and forwarded to the board for approval. So that's the more accurate language. So we're not taking out the approval. It's just the date is updated, and then and it becomes one line instead of many, many lines. So that underline means that's inserted. So it takes out the first line, but
put
the
in
second line goes
line.
In. You still get to approve. It's just worded differently. It reflects more accurately the way the education code is written.
And then the first two, they're crossed off, but you're saying we are going to approve it?
So if you read the underlined, bolded underlined portion, it takes those few sentences and puts it into one.
I got it now.
So you
thank you for explaining that. I feel good about that one, but just not the first two.
Yeah. The question was
both on the way it's written for the review.
Thank you.
The question was about shortening it so much, you know, when it's a safety plan, and it looks like a lot of the language for the individual school could be taken out of the board policy as long as we have to adopt their plan.
So the intention of a board policy, as Dr. Mm-hmm. Mitchell stated, is that's the overarching piece. It's the idea that the board policy should say we have a safety plan and that the board has approved it. Where we say what needs to be encompassed in that plan, that's really an administrative regulation, and that will be moved to that regulation. It's just we need to have the board approval first.
Yeah. And it's good when you look at your board policies that you always look at the ARs that line up with them, because that kind of adds some clarification. It helps you see that all the pieces are together.
So mm-hmm. even though this is crossed off, we're still voting for it. But it's somewhere else in bylaw somewhere? Is that
actually, we're not voting tonight. We're just
no, I know later on. Yeah. This is the reading today, but we're discussing it.
Yeah, and Dr. Mitchell, maybe you can reference in a Friday report the AR that matches up with it.
Yes, I can certainly do that. And I think, again, it's important to recognize, yes, there are strikeouts, but there are bold and underline. So the provisions, I think, that you're looking at, Donna, is that you want to make sure that the board's approving it by March 1st.
Which
that is bolded.
In the bold,
yes.
I see that.
And that the board shall review the comprehensive safety plans to ensure compliance with state law, which is what the Ed Code,
okay.
board policy, and administrative regulation, which will have that detail in it.
Okay.
I'll scroll down slowly.
Yeah. Thank you.
So just to clarify, I asked Dennis to put it up on the piece. So the strikeout is that first piece that I referenced, and then the underline mm-hmm. bold is new, so it
you already
replaces.
You
yeah.
talked me into it.
I'm going to stop now then.
It's good.
Just an observation, and I see it in Edge Code, and I saw it on the CSBA sample and everything. I have trouble understanding or accepting it, where it says that new school campuses shall develop a safety plan within 1 year of initiating operations. How can you open a school site without a safety plan? This amazes me that would be in code. Yet it references the code there. So I would hope that when one opens a school site, they would have a safety plan at the same time.
You would hope so.
But apparently the code gives you 1 year to do it.
Okay, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor of accepting this. All we're doing is accepting this
as
first reading. Mm-hmm. That's what the motion is. It's not we're approving it. It's accepting it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we'll have a second reading next time, and if you have more discussion, that can still take place. Okay, next we have item 6I, revised board policy 5116.1, intra-district open enrollment discussion. Oops, intra-district open enrollment. May I have a motion to receive this reading for the first reading?
I make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed, 5-0. Revised board policy 5117, inter-district and intra-district attendance. I need a motion to receive for first reading and review the revised board policy 5117, inter-district and intra-district attendance?
I'll move.
I make a motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Next is approve Roland Unified District's initial proposal for bargaining with the Association of Roland Educators for purpose of negotiations. I need a motion to adopt the initial proposal for collective bargaining between Roland Unified School District and the Association of Roland Educators. Should this be part of the motion, the whole thing?
I make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed 5-0. Next is receive the initial proposal for bargaining for the Association of Roland. I'm sorry. I think I'm reading it again. Nope. It's a different one. Okay. Yeah. Receive the initial proposal for bargaining from the Association of Roland Educators for the purpose of negotiations. This is an action item, so I need a motion to receive the initial proposal for collective bargaining between Roland Unified School District and the Association of Roland Educators.
I make second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'm sorry, was there a disposed?
I'm just always late because I'm always still reading.
Okay, passed 5-0. Next is receive for review and approval the 2017-2018 instructional calendar. May I have a motion?
I move.
Need a second?
Second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passed 5-0. Next, we're going to move on to the consent calendar. There were no items pulled from this consent calendar, so may I have a motion that we pass the consent calendar items? Opposed? I mean, sorry. That part of the night now. May I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion? Oh, no discussion, sorry. Okay, let's vote. Favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, I get kind of dingy as we move on. Okay, now we're going to go to board comments. Right? Not the comments, okay. Board comments are next, and tonight we'll start with Mr. Malcolm.
Oh. I'll keep it short to 10 minutes. No. First, welcome, Brandy Chapman, for being here and surviving your first board meeting. Look forward next month. I want to thank all the certificated and classified staff that took time off of their winter break to attend the conferences. I gave a report on that last night at the RHCCC meeting. And everybody automatically assumes that when students don't go to school, everybody's off partying. And they were surprised to find out how many employees were attending conferences during their winter break. It was an honor, Sharon brought it up, to serve lunch to the classified employees. And for all they do for us, it's the least we can do for them. I had the privilege Saturday to chaperone some Roland High School Key Clubbers, since you got Rotary in there at the beginning. And we ended up serving over 100 meals to homeless people on Saturday. It was a great event. The Key Clubbers got to meet some new students. This is over in Brea. And it was just a really neat event for them to see, you know, to partner with a group of other volunteers to serve these meals, and how grateful the people were to receive them. They're not here, but the music department, I want to express my apologies to them. I usually attend all their events, but I ended up getting sick over winter break. And I did not get out of the house for about 2 weeks. I ended up with the flu and bronchitis and everything else. So I did miss the music programs, but I was following them on tweet. I was getting the tweets. So I felt like I attended them partly through the tweets. So So thank them for all that they've done for the students with their music. And I'm excited about the new leadership with the Family Resource Center. I was just thinking, and this just happened to come to my head right now, which could be dangerous, but with the ALC and the ATS and the success programs, it'd be nice if Family Resource Center could be integrated with some of that, because a lot of those students that are participating in those programs do have some situations at home, and it'd probably be a good way to integrate the Family Resource Center into that those programs. And finally, I don't know if most people noticed, I got my Lucky Chinese pin on because January 28th is the Chinese New Year, the year of the rooster, which is loyalty, commitment, hard work, family, values, and top-notch appearance. So we should have a good year this year under the year of the rooster. And I would expect everybody to be well-dressed that's in this room. And that's all I have right now. And Happy New Year's to everybody, and look forward to a successful year.
Thank you, Mr. Malcolm. Ms. Friedman?
Happy New Year, everyone. Thank you. Oops, sorry. Thank you five people that stayed. Wow, how nice. I'm going to be short. So first, Brandy, welcome. I'm excited to write back and forth a million times and ahead of time, so thank you very much for everything. Also, I wanted to say welcome to Laurel Estrada at the FRC. And Killian, I really enjoyed the ASB coordinator coming up and talking, having 70 students, and after she works as an aide, that's amazing. And one of the consent items we approved was the Williams report from October 1st to December 31st, and there were no complaints regarding textbooks, instructional materials, teacher vacancies, or missed assignments or facilities conditions. I just wanted to say thank you for all that were involved in making that possible. So thank you, staff. That was a great job. Again, I just wanted to mention that I think the alternate learning center and alternate to suspension classroom sounds like they are just what struggling students really need. They both have so many benefits for our students. And I know 2017 will be a great year for Roland Unified School District. I hope everyone had a nice vacation, holiday, and new year, and we're going to have a great year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Friedman. Mr. Chen?
Welcome, Brandy. Welcome to join our team. You did a good job today. And thank you, Alex, for your presentation. And I appreciate the findings from the Nigros, and I'd like to see the findings instead of no findings, everything's good. So, yeah, so if we can find it, we can correct it. So that's good. And thank you, Dr. Mitchell, for the dual immersion program update. And we're looking forward to see the next update and see the progress. Yeah. And Happy New Year, everyone. And happy 2017 and the year of the rooster. Thank you,
Mr. Chen. Ms. Pride?
Happy New Year to everybody. Welcome to you again, Brandy. We're glad to have you on board. I know we're going to be getting busy again here really soon with lots of activities. The only thing I would like to call to everyone's attention is that on January 15th, at West Covina City Hall, the San Gabriel Valley NAACP will once again be hosting their Martin Luther King Day celebration. I was trying to find the email to give you guys all the information, but it's not coming up on my iPad here. But if you go to the website for the San Gabriel Valley NAACP, you can get all of the information. Last year's event was very, very good event, and I'm looking forward to this year's event being the same. So hopefully we'll see some of you guys there. And other than that, have a good one.
Thank you, Ms. Pride. Are you speaking this year?
No, not this year.
she spoke last year. Okay, I'll be last. Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to Brandy. As the new president, I will be reaching out soon once everything gets in order. I'm reaching out to our unions, to our principals, so that we can have a few meetings, maybe monthly, with the two bargaining units. once for the principals probably. I'd just like to introduce myself and give them a little bit of a pep talk. I appreciate what David and Donna said about the work that's been done for the Alternative Learning Center and the associated group. A lot of work's gone into that, and I think it'll really help our district. I think maybe we'll be able to catch some of these students that are starting to slip early, and it'll help us a lot. Of course, help our students. Alex, thank you, and Aubrey, for your hard work. I know this auditing is not easy, and with us coming at you with all these questions and why this and why that. I think we'll have a good team in that department now moving forward, and hopefully we can ward off anything that happens to go between the cracks or something. So I have nothing else to say, so may I have a motion to adjourn? Sorry, you don't get to close yet. We have just a real short period. We have to go back to closed session. So we are adjourning for we're moving to closed session at 8:41, or 9:41. I wish it were 8:41.